Old Mountain opened on Christmas Day 2003. Weinstein had never found the partner he promised Disney. He had managed to sell the foreign rights, no small feat for a film about the American Civil War, but only for $30 million. Reviews were generally admiring, but not positive enough to turn it into a major hit. The film grossed a respectable $95 million in the United States, but didn't make back its costs, confirming Eisner's apprehensions that a Civil War costume drama would have limited appeal. Still, it came close to turning a profit, and may well do so over time. The real issue was that Eisner, Peter Murphy, and Dick Cook felt that Harvey Weinstein had brazenly defied them and breached his contract. It hardly enhanced the tone of their ongoing negotiations. During the first week in January 2004, Steve Burke, now president of Comcast, Brian Roberts, Comcast's chairman, other top executives, and a group of investment bankers and advisors gathered at the Marriott Hotel near the Philadelphia airport, a site where they were unlikely to be noticed. In case anyone did, the ostensible purpose of the meeting was to discuss Comcast's strategic direction. But this was clearly no routine meeting. Among those attending were major dealmakers, including the Quadrangle Group's Steve Rattner, who'd hosted the media conference where Eisner was interviewed by Charlie Rose. When Burke left Disney to join Comcast, the cable operator had 4.5 million subscribers. By 2002, it had nearly doubled to 8.5 million. Then it had doggedly pursued and ultimately succeeded in buying the cable assets of distressed AT&T, making Comcast the largest cable operator in the country, with 21.3 million subscribers. Despite widespread skepticism on Wall Street, Comcast had successfully integrated AT&T's far-flung cable operations, an undertaking directed by Burke, and its stock had nearly doubled from its low in 2002. Comcast was now seen as a major dealmaker, and with the AT&T merger behind it, was ready for something new. Alone among the biggest cable companies, Comcast was an almost pure distribution company, exactly the kind of company that Eisner had derided as being from a different planet from content companies like Disney. Time Warner, the second largest cable operator, had major content holdings in its Warner Brothers, HBO, and CNN operations, and Fox under Rupert Murdoch had DirecTV, as well as its studio and network operations. By contrast, Comcast derived 95% of its revenue from cable, with the remainder coming from its modest part ownership of the E, Outdoor Life, and Golf channels. E, in partnership with Disney. But now Comcast had 21.5 million subscribers, with 20 million considered the critical mass necessary to launch a profitable cable channel. That meant that Comcast could launch programming on its own cable systems. This had taken on more urgency the previous summer, when Francis Vivendi put its Universal Studio on the blocks. Roberts and Burke had spent 3 months analyzing the Universal assets and had grown increasingly excited about the potential for a Comcast-Universal combination. But once General Electric entered the bidding, the price soared. Roberts and Burke thought it was too expensive, and Comcast never surfaced with a bid. Nevertheless, the